Every 2 seconds, someone, somewhere in the world is having a stroke. Some strokes are silent or mild, but others are severe and will kill one person every 10 seconds. That's 6 million people every year, more than the deaths from AIDS, tuberculosis and malaria combined. But what about those who survive? Those who, after dealing with the initial crisis, have to set about picking up the pieces of their lives. Stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Recovering from a stroke is all about overcoming the odds. There's the initial crisis, and if you survive, there's a protracted period of rehabilitation. Penn State Hershey Medical Center brings us the story of Cody, and his story is told by his mother, Bonnie. Watch.
Well, that day, I was at work, my husband was at work, and my daughter was off school that day. She called me and she's like, when's Bubba going to be home? Because that's what we call him. And when I call him, he normally either picks up right away or calls me right back, which he did not. So just motherly instinct kicked in and I thought something's not right because he had stayed the night at a friend's house. My husband's a Marine. He doesn't really show emotion or anything, but I could tell in his voice, he said, I need that boy's phone number now. I need to know where he lives now. Something's not right. Somebody had actually dialed Cody's dad's number and put the phone up to his ear, and all my husband heard was like just garbled sound. Your son's incoherent. I want to call 911.
My colleague got a call first that Cody had suffered a large left brain stroke. He was beyond all of the standard stroke therapies that an outside community hospital and or primary stroke center could offer. Within an hour of hospital arrival, he was taken to the operating room where he underwent a hemicraniectomy and duroplasty. That's removal of the skull and stretching the lining over the surface of the brain. And that was done for life-saving measures and to hopefully minimize brain swelling and mass effect. He was placed on hypothermia where his brain and body were cooled down to approximately 33 degrees. And that cooling was sustained for a few days. And the most unique thing about that is on the follow-up brain scans done several days later, there was only mild swelling and mass effect, so we couldn't have asked for better as to the goals of those initial two therapies.
Had they not done the craniotomy, the possibility of, probably more than a possibility, that the swelling would have gone down onto his brainstem and he would have died.
He certainly would have. We have the rest of his story later, along with a look at something you want to include in your daily schedule, an expert on stroke recovery, and a taste of being in the gym with Sean. But first, the news. In the headlines today, oversleeping linked to stroke, early exercise encourages brain repair, and bilingual brains sustain less stroke damage. People who exercise regularly and don't skimp on sleep have less risk of having a stroke. A study involving 300,000 Americans found that those who slept 7 to 8 hours at night were 25% less likely to have a stroke than those who got either less or more sleep. In fact, spending more than 8 hours in bed was associated with an almost 50% higher risk of stroke, and getting less than 7 hours carried a 22% higher risk. Only 1.2% of those who got a healthy amount of sleep and regular, vigorous exercise went on to have a stroke, versus 3% of other adults. But if you can't get both sleep and vigorous exercise, then be sure to get one or the other. Undertaking aerobic exercise within the first 2 days of a stroke improves outcomes, at least that's in animal studies. One research group combined the results of 47 animal studies that measured the effects of exercise on brain repair after a stroke. Within 24 to 48 hours post-stroke, the animals were forced to exercise for 30 minutes most days. This appeared to reduce the size of the stroke and protect the brain tissue around the stroke area against oxidative damage and inflammation during the initial month when monitoring was being performed. It appears that exercise increases at least three types of growth factor for nerves. Moderate exercise was more advantageous than vigorous exercise for the formation of new networks or synapses in the brain. Speaking more than one language may protect against brain injury related to stroke. These are the findings from reviewing medical records in India. Bilingual stroke patients were twice as likely to have normal cognitive function following their stroke and to perform better on tests of attention and function. However, rates of speech deficit following stroke were the same in both groups. It's thought that learning how to switch between two or more languages requires more cerebral function and therefore acts as a protective mechanism during brain insults. So add speaking another language to your bucket list. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's interview was recorded at the American College of Lifestyle Medicine meeting in Nashville, where we spoke to Dr. Beth Freites, physical medicine and rehab specialist and assistant clinical professor at Harvard Medical School. She is co-author of the book Life After Stroke, The Guide to Recovering Your Health and Preventing Another Stroke. Here she explains what causes strokes.
There are two types of strokes. There's an infarct, which is a clot. Then there's a hemorrhage, which is a bleed. So the bleeds or hemorrhages are most often caused by damage to blood vessels from high blood pressure or a congenital malformation called an AVM, arteriovenous malformation, where the vessel walls are weak, so they're prone to burst. That causes the bleed. In the case of the high blood pressure, the sheer force on the vessels weakens them, makes them more prone to bleed. Those are your hemorrhages, your bleeds.
So that's like a blowout in a tire, isn't it? You've got that high pressure and boom, it just goes.
Exactly. That's right.
And the clots?
The clots are primarily caused from high cholesterol. We call it atherosclerosis. So when people have high cholesterol levels in the bloodstream, there's a reaction that occurs in the blood vessel walls. It's an inflammatory reaction. It's a little bit complicated, but basically, the blood vessel walls have a nick in them from some damage. It could be smoking. It could be high sugar levels. It could also be from a blood pressure. In the vessel wall, what will occur is the inflammatory cells can get in. Cholesterol can build up in the wall so that pushes the wall into the lumen. The lumen is the opening of the wall. So if we are having accumulations of cholesterol and inflammatory cells here pushing in, then the size of the hole, the lumen in the artery, will decrease. It's possible that there'll be a plaque building up here that will then, in fact, close the lumen entirely. So thus there is no flow of blood, which would be the clot, the inability of blood to feed the brain. And this is really what's happening in both cases. If there is a clot from atrial fibrillation, which is an arrhythmia in the heart, such that the...
And that's quite common in seniors, isn't it?
It's common.
And then what happens with the heart then?
So if you have atrial fibrillation, it means you are not beating in a steady pattern with your heart. You're not getting a rhythmic burst of blood flow. You could have more quivering, actually. So blood can remain stagnant, can pool in the heart. This then causes blood to clot. So you actually have a clot of blood in the heart sitting, probably in the atrium. A piece of that clot can come off, travel into the aorta, go up into cerebral vasculature and then clot there.
We'll talk about what to look for so you can recognize a stroke right ahead. And straight after the break, there's an ingredient that you may want to keep in the kitchen. But first, this.
Did you know that nature is healing to body, mind, and spirit?
Oh, yeah, that's why I like to watch it on television here. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Well, I like watching nature programs on TV too, but it's not the same as getting out in person.
Oh, so you don't like the television? Well, look at those beautiful nature shots on my iPad. Aren't they wonderful?
No, I'm talking about being in nature, in person.
Well, I've got these great nature pictures on my telephone. Look at these.
Ah, you forced me to do it now.
Hey, where are we?
This is what I mean. Outside, in person, better than any TV, iPad, or phone.
Yeah, but don't do that to me again.
What, this?
Hey, quit doing that to me.
What, this? There, that's better. Now you can be in nature, experience with all your senses in three dimensions.
You're right.
Yeah, see, you can hear the birds, you can crunch the leaves, you can feel the wind. So much more enriching than TV.
Oh, but I'm glad you're not talking about that waterfall over there.
Why not?
Because you might.
Nature, don't just look at it, get into it. Doctor's orders.
Welcome back. Xylitol was discovered in the late 1800s as a natural sugar found in fruits, veggies, and the bark of many plants. It was found to be a safer sweetener than sugar for people with diabetes because it didn't push their blood sugar as high or their insulin as high. So then it was added to chewing gum, and surprise, it resulted in fewer cavities and tooth extractions. So then the hunt was on to find out why. It turns out there are three reasons for that. One reason is that its molecular structure allows it to interact with calcium, and the calcium hops on and is then carried through the saliva to the enamel, where that calcium is able to help the enamel remineralize, covering over small dental cavities. Not really big ones, but the small ones can actually be reversed with xylitol. Secondly, it tricks cavity-causing strep mutans bacteria into thinking it's a normal sugar because structurally they're very similar. And so the bacteria takes up the xylitol thinking it's going to be the great energy source that it needs, but in fact it's useless to them, and so they end up starving to death. That gives teeth the chance to repair themselves rather than spending time fighting bacterial invasion. Thirdly, having xylitol in your mouth makes you release more saliva, and that increased saliva is protective to your teeth, and it also changes the pH of the saliva from acid to alkaline, reducing plaque, inflammation of the gums, and erosion of the enamel. But how do you apply it to your teeth? Well, the obvious answer would be in toothpaste. And so there are a lot of toothpastes around with xylitol in. But lozenges and syrup were also tried along with the toothpaste. None of them seem to work quite as well as chewing gum. And that's probably because chewing gum lingers longer. But how much do you need and how often do you need to chew it? Well, it seems like 6 grams of xylitol per day, 3 to 5 times in the day. So that would be 1 or 2 pieces of gum after meals and again before bed. Now, the fact that it kills strep mutans bacteria got one clever scientist wondering, will it kill other strep bacteria as well, ones that cause ear infections or respiratory infections? And sure enough, it did. In fact, his research group went on to do a clinical study and found that 8 to 9 grams of oral xylitol a day for children reduced ear infections by 40%. Even if they just chew gum, it reduces ear infections in kids by 25%. So then a physician in Texas wondered if he could help his granddaughter's chronic ear infections with xylitol. She was too young to chew the gum, so he developed a xylitol solution. He put it in a spray bottle, and it was given to her after each diaper change. It worked. No more ear infections. So then he tried it on 10 kids in his practice, and they reduced their ear infections by 90%. He then went on to patent that product, and it's now available over the counter for all ages. Though you can make your own solution from one cup of water, a quarter teaspoon of salt, and a half a teaspoon of xylitol. And you spray that into the nose in large volume, low pressure, and really just kind of wash the bacteria out, because it decreases the adherence of the bacteria. They love to stick on the mucus like this. And so what that xylitol does is they have to just let go. And as they wash the sinuses, the nasal passages, those bacteria just fly away. It also dilutes the salt in the mucus. That all helps to reduce inflammation and relieve the symptoms of sinusitis, which we know is so miserable. So if you're looking for a natural way to reduce the invasion of bacteria to your ears, nose, mouth, reduce dental cavities, ease hay fever, consider xylitol in one of its many forms. Cody was staying overnight at a friend's house, and his parents became concerned when he couldn't speak on the phone. He had had a massive stroke. Quickly, he was airlifted to Penn State Hershey Medical Center for neurosurgery to deal with the event, and a large hole was opened in his skull and in the dural covering over the brain to relieve the pressure from swelling. He did better than expected. Watch.
I said, I love you, quietly. That's it, but Mom cried.
I think if anybody has a loved one who goes through something like this, I definitely would recommend them coming to Hershey, because they are just really, seems like cutting edge, and I would strongly recommend Dr. Reichwein, because he really thinks outside the box, and he doesn't act like it's a job.
Stroke can affect anyone at any age, so nobody is immune to stroke. Many young individuals have similar risks to older individuals, and the classic risk factors are high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, alcohol abuse.
I never suspected a stroke. I don't think I knew really anything about a stroke, to be honest with you. I'm probably like, a lot of people, you might use that word, and I see hear people all the time using the word heart attack and stroke interchangeably, and knowing now that they're not the same thing.
A stroke and a heart attack are very similar in that they're vascular events, but a heart attack will give you chest pain. So often, since stroke doesn't hurt, it's very tempting for people to wait and wait for the symptoms to go away, and that's the worst thing you can do. You need to call 911. There's a lot of different symptoms. A simple way to remember them is by remembering the word FAST. This is a FAST criteria. It means face, arm, speech, time, F-A-S-T.
Cody was deemed bad coming through the door. We threw in the kitchen sink and the refrigerator. This is why I'm here, because at the end of the day, we took an individual who otherwise would have certainly died and gave him a new lease on life. And from my perspective at Stroke Center, I consider ourselves the future, and for our patients, the future is now.
Thank you for helping me and save my life.
Obviously hard to come to terms with your own mortality at such a young age. Today we're talking with Dr. Beth Frates, physiatrist and lifestyle medicine expert. I asked her what the signs are for a stroke.
A stroke can manifest in a variety of different ways depending on the artery which is affected. As we said, it's either going to be a bleed or a clot. Depends where it happens inside the brain, because the brain is a fascinating organ. And if a middle cerebral artery is affected, it will affect our motor system and sensory system. So what will we see? We will see weakness in arm, leg. However, if it's an anterior artery, if it's a specific artery, it might just be the leg. You will see, feel sensory changes. In fact, not be able to feel.
So numbness.
Numbness. You would not be able to feel your leg, your arm. You would also, depending on which artery, if it affects Broca's or Wernicke's spot in the brain, that's the way we communicate. That's our speech. So we might have garbled speech or the lack of comprehension of speech. So in that case, someone may be speaking and you're not understanding anything.
Mm. And that you often will see that you're speaking to someone and they're just staring at you because you can tell they're not grasping it.
Mm.
And this can happen quite suddenly, can't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yes. Yeah. So a stroke is, in fact, a sudden change in our baseline. I like to think of it in a mnemonic called falling from our baseline. Falling. So face mm-hmm. can be numb or weak. We talked about the arm and leg.
And you see
I didn't
the
get
droop
to the face.
Of the face.
Right.
Yep.
Didn't get to the face. So it's face. A. That's F is for
right.
falling. F. Then A is arm.
Mm-hmm.
The leg is your limb, your legs.
Yes.
Language we talked about. So inability to create coherent sentences or to comprehend. The eye is actually for eyesight. You can have changes, sudden changes in your vision. This is not, I need my reading glasses. Let me, I can't see that paper. No, this is inability to see half of your peripheral field. So maybe you're blocking out. You're feeling as if you're in a tunnel or one whole half of the room seems to be gone and black. This can also be in terms of spots that you're seeing. So visual changes, your eyesight. Then N stands for nasty headache, not just a regular headache. People get headaches a lot. They get migraines. When blood hits the brain, it is very irritating. So it is a headache that you have never experienced before in your life. It is pounding. It is so severe. You're holding it. You may even feel like throwing up, a nasty, nasty headache. Then the last G for falling, the G, is gait. Not a gait that you open and close. Gait as in how you walk. You will feel unsteady. This could be due to weakness in the leg that is affected. Or if your cerebellum, the back of the brain where we have balance, is affected because the artery feeding it is the one that's clogged or there's a bleed there, then we will be off balance.
So falling, and those are the signs that people need to watch for if a stroke happens. Now, one thing about a stroke is you typically get some recovery.
Yes.
And for some people, that's within 24 hours.
Yes.
And we call those the TIAs. But here we're talking more about the strokes. You still can get some recovery, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So the transient ischemic attack, the TIA, is any of those symptoms we talked about, falling. But as you said, they are gone after 24 hours. So they're your warning signs, though. You need to get a full workup so that you will not suffer the devastating consequences of an actual stroke. Now, we have seen many patients, and studies have shown us people do recover. They can recover even fully.
What determines that recovery?
Yeah.
What are some of the factors that will help recovery, mm-hmm. and how long does recovery continue mm-hmm. for, mm-hmm. typically?
Yes, these are great questions. So recovery can start within 24 hours. Mostly what's happening when you have your stroke, if it's a bleed, those can be very severe. The bleed can continue. So the more severe the bleed is, the more difficult the recovery. However, people can make full recoveries from bleeds. But it has to do with what the damage was in the first place and where the damage was in the brain, depending on the recovery. With the infarcts, a very small clot can cause remarkable damage if it's in that language center I mentioned, Wernicke's or Broca's area. So it's a small area of the brain that's affected, but it's causing a lot of trouble for you. How do we know if someone will recover fully or not?
Yeah.
How can we tell? Well, if you get immediate attention, this is why you need to act fast. If you are suffering or you're experiencing any of those symptoms I just discussed, if you get immediate attention, and you go into the emergency room, you might be able to get special medication that can bust the clot, if indeed that's what occurred, if it's the clot. If you get that special medication right away, you will have a much better recovery. If you have a bleed, but you get in right away, they can stop the bleed, address it immediately, depending on the reason for the bleed. But the quicker you get into the hospital, the better your outcome will be. That's one massive, major factor, and that's why there's a campaign called FAST. Face, arms, speech, take action. I like that, but I've seen a lot of patients that have leg problems or dizziness or instability with gait. So I like FAST, face, arms, speech, take action. But please remember falling from your baseline with eyesight, with all these other things.
And that's important and useful information. Coming up after the break, we're going to get moving with Sean. But before we go there, here's a point to ponder. Most of us have been spared the physical paralysis of a stroke, but none of us can escape spiritual paralysis. Jesus admonished his disciples to watch and pray, for the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. All believers have experienced the ebb and the flow of the Christian experience. There's an almost unstoppable enthusiasm to do good, to watch and to pray. There's a thrill of sensing God's guidance by his spirit in your everyday life. However, somehow the inner power and joy seeps away, and what was once a delight simply becomes a chore. We lose heart. And if that's your experience right now, don't feel that you're alone. The truth is, we have all been there. Paul admonishes the Galatians not to become weary in doing good. Why? Because in due time, we will reap if we faint not. But what is there to reap? In Galatians 8, he reminds them and us that we can reap eternal life. So when you feel as though your enthusiasm for God and his word is slipping away, please don't let go. Hang on. Think about the possibility of living happily forever with no more suffering and certainly no more strokes. If it's a chore, still do it, but take extra time in his word. It's like rehab. Before too long, you'll sense God's power once again, and the inner joy will fill your soul. Your strength will be restored, and you'll be spiritually able to take up your bed and walk. Sean's back, so get off the sofa. It's time to work out. What have you got for us, Sean?
I got two dumbbells, two sets of dumbbells, his and hers.
Oh,
okay,
great.
Simple. You get husband and wife. Friend, foe, you never know. It's great to just use a set of dumbbells that will challenge you. At the same time, you want something that's not going to endanger you, okay? Mm. Dumbbells are a great way for you to recruit muscles and kind of stimulate the core just to keep balance. So I got some dumbbells, and we're going to use that in a second, okay? What we're going to do today is use a line. Pretend like you put a piece of tape on the floor, okay? And what I want you to do is put your ankles together, and you're going to go from side to side, jumping over that tape, okay? Very light. You're going to do the hopping version because you're very agile, okay? When you just go right here. I'm going to show you the low impact version, all right? Go. All you got to do is move side to side. You can get a little bop to it, okay? Stick about 30 seconds, 45 seconds, even a minute just to get the heart rate going.
Do we have to go for a minute?
You got to go for a minute?
Do we have to?
No.
Couldn't we just
Five,
do it for 30?
5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. That was entertaining for me. So this is a great one. Just get your ankles warmed up. Get the heart rate going as well.
It actually got a bit more than my ankles warmed up.
The body is nice and warmed up. Again, preparing you. Dynamic exercises preparing you for exercise.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go grab some. Let's grab these dumbbells.
All right.
Okay. We're going to utilize the forward lunge, okay? But this time with the forward lunge, we're going to do a lateral raise. Okay, we've done this before where a lunge is your standard going forward. Great exercise for your legs. But what I want you to do is lunge, and as you come up, come right here.
Right.
Come back to that center where you started from, alternate legs, come here. Okay, what you're working are your quads. You can keep on going, I'll explain. You're working your quads at the same time you're working your delts. That's the V part of your arm. That's what everyone sees when you wear a dress, okay?
Oh.
So you want to work it.
So you want to work this.
You want to work it. But here's a note. Pause at the top. Stop right there. That's what you want to do. You want to be able to. This is not torture. You want to be able to work these delts and go back. And go back. Perfect. So this is a great exercise for working your quads and your delts. Okay, this is called a forward lunge with a lateral raise. Okay.
So easy.
It is.
And you get all of that working.
There you go. So the next one is a tricep kickback. Okay. Eyes forward, and you can do both like this. I'm gonna show you the alternate version. All right. We're just gonna kick back. When you get to the top, let's pause at the top here. You gotta think about these muscles that you're working, okay? And you wanna contract it at the top. The last thing you wanna do is just willy-nilly throw the weight back. You can injure yourself, plus there's no benefit to your muscles.
Yeah, you get added benefit from the time you're investing.
You might as well,
yeah.
Okay? So the third one, what we're gonna do is a lateral squat. And what I want you to do is just bring the weight here. You're gonna alternate sides. I'm just gonna stick with one side.
Okay.
So it looks like this. You can alternate to the opposite side.
Okay.
Perfect. And then go the opposite side. That's called a lateral squat with a dumbbell, okay? Another total body exercise, working your body, working your core. Keep that leg straight though.
It really works.
Try to bend.
It does.
So we're supersetting your lunge with the lateral raise at the end, getting a different angle with your lateral squat.
Perfect.
And your reach, okay?
Perfect.
So you're all done. You got three exercises. Stick with it for about 10 to 25 seconds or so. Have some fun, you know. Change up the intensity, change up the weight, and challenge your body.
Excellent.
Nice and warmed up, right?
Yeah, very warmed up.
Let's go. Open your hands up. Stretch all the way down. Come all the way back up. Reach nice and tall. Twist. And you're good to go.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
You're very welcome.
Excellent.
You're very welcome.
Do you have high blood pressure? A little careful menu planning can help. A 2007 health professional study found that hypertension was almost 25% less likely among people eating at least 4 servings daily of whole grain foods. If you plan oatmeal for breakfast, a whole wheat sandwich for lunch, brown rice with dinner, and snack on popcorn, you've easily enjoyed your 4 servings. Adding whole grains to your menu plan is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Kailani asks, I'm 15 years old and I eat a vegan diet. Well, good for you, Kailani. Should I be supplementing vitamin B12 or any other important vitamins for my health? If so, how much and what time of the day should I take them? Well, if you're vegan, you should be supplementing vitamin B12, absolutely essential, and also probably vitamin D. For B12, take 500 to 1,000 micrograms a day as a chewable pill that you dissolve under your tongue, preferably when you wake up in the morning and you have an empty stomach. For the vitamin D, it's possible that you're actually deficient, in which case you need extra, and you could take 50,000 units, that's 50,000 units of vitamin D3 every 2 weeks. Now, vitamin D is fat-soluble vitamin, so you need to take it with a meal that has some fat in, and that will aid absorption. Someone else emailed, I've had breast cancer twice, once in each breast, and my oncologist has told me to stay away from soy. I was watching your program the other day, and you talked about soy. I've been vegetarian for many years. What should I do? Now, I know it's hard to go against the advice of your oncologist. After all, they are dealing with a disease that's very serious. But you could take him an article off the web and ask him about the link between soy and prevention of recurrence of breast cancer. And the current research suggests that for women in your situation who've already had breast cancer, they don't have an active recurrence right now, that 10 milligrams of soy each day will reduce the risk of recurrence by 25%, even 30%. However, if you take that soy, you don't want to take it as a soy isolate or a soy tablet. Instead, it's in the diet. So that's what the data is based on. So consider switching to soy milk, eating green soya beans or edamame as they may be called, and including things like tofu or other soy products in your daily diet. Someone else called and asked, can estrogen help when you reach the menopause? Well, the menopause is basically your ovaries running out of eggs, and at that point, there's a drop in the hormone level estrogen. That gives a lot of symptoms, such as hot flushes, night sweats, increased risk of cardiovascular disease, and difficulty with intercourse. So by replacing estrogen sooner after menopause, there are some clear advantages. The advantage of replacing estrogen once you've gone more than 5 years after menopause is not really so obvious, and you'd need to discuss that with your physician. Thanks for those questions. I love hearing from you, so keep sending them, whether it's by Facebook, email, text, or phone. And now, let's go shopping. Today, there are over 1,000 different varieties of mangoes throughout the world. The mango tree will fruit 4 to 6 years after planting, and they require hot, dry periods to set and produce a good crop. Most of the mangoes sold in the United States are imported from countries with tropical climates near the equator. But within the United States, mangoes are primarily grown in Florida, California, Hawaii, and Puerto Rico. Mangoes are a source of dietary fiber. They have lots of fiber, potassium, magnesium, vitamin B6, vitamin A, and vitamin C. 1 cup of sliced mango has about 107 calories. Drink fresh mango juice, or try adding it to your salad for a sweet flavor that will add a fresh twist that you'll just love. Bon appetit. On today's show, we have a physician who's both a health and wellness coach and a physiatrist at the Spalding Rehab Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts. I asked Dr. Beth Freites to explain the recovery and rehab timeline.
With physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, you may need all three. A patient might need all three of these. Generally, there's the acute rehab stay. There's acute stay at the hospital, and then there's the rehab stay, which could last 2 to 3 weeks, and then you're getting daily physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, depending on what you need. And the recovery comes quickly at that time usually. Continue to make steady improvements, 3 months, 6 months. Most of the improvement you'll see motor-wise will be achieved by about a year. I want to say you can still make functional gains after a year. What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
You can, if you are having trouble with what we call transfers because of weakness, you can actually practice the transfers, learn the transfers, become more independent with more work. You can work on your speech continually. You can...
This is all hard work then?
Yes, it does take hard work.
Now, your dad had a stroke at a young age.
Yes.
And I guess when you're young, you have so much motivation.
Yes.
How long did he continue to improve for?
Good questions. So my dad had a stroke when he was 52, I was 18, and he had an infarct. He had a clot. And he was paralyzed on the left side. It took about a year to get his motor movement back. He was walking with a cane, I would say, at 6 months, then could get rid of the cane at a year. Fine motor movement in the left hand, so the ability to manipulate coins, did not come back fully, but that was the deficit that he had, and he could compensate for that. So functional gains. You can become more functional. You can learn how to adapt, pull the change out with your right hand, then pluck out with your left. Instead of trying to use this hand, get the coins, pull them out. You just adapt so that you can be as functional as you possibly can be.
Right. Now, how do you maximize recovery? Mm-hmm. You know, you were talking about PT or physiotherapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. How do you maximize recovery? What's your advice to people?
So working hard in the beginning and sticking with the physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy.
Not giving up at 3 months, but just keeping on.
Continuing your work. Working different angles of your recovery, perhaps using a ball when you get home. You may be home and your therapy is outpatient therapy 2-3 times a week. On the days off that you don't have therapy, you can be doing home exercises, home programs. If you're able to walk, increasing your endurance with a cane, with a walker. If not, getting on some kind of exercise bike, working to increase your endurance so you will be able to participate in the physical therapy at your best and give it all your energy while you're doing it. Looking at the whole person in terms of recovery will give us our best outcome.
What do you mean by that, looking at the whole person?
Mm-hmm. We've been talking primarily about the body and the muscles and the functioning. We often talk about activities of daily living, which are very important, being able to feed yourself, being able to transfer, being able to use the bathroom yourself. These are very important independent functions. I'm talking about full recovery in whole person language, mind, body, spirit. So, okay, for the body, working, as we said, with our therapy, looking at getting physical activity every day, looking at what you're eating, your nourishment, how is it fueling your mind and your muscles, looking at your sleep, getting adequate sleep. These are things the body needs, physiological level.
And your brain especially needs sleep, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And your brain must be going through tremendous healing during
and
this
recovery.
Process.
And the more you work with physical therapy, occupational therapy, the more you create synapses, new synapses. So there may be part of the brain that is not coming back, not able to function at the level it was before, but you can work around that.
Yeah, I like your book. It's very practical. Mm. And the analogy in there was a busy room with lots of electrical plugs in the outlets, mm-hmm. and suddenly the stroke happens, they're mm-hmm. all gone. Mm-hmm. But you're saying the brain can sort of plug into a different outlet mm-hmm. and create new connections in a bypass kind of system.
Exactly. So that's why we want to work so hard on that body piece. But let's also look at the mind piece, which is really critical. And for the mind, we're talking about stress reduction. We're talking about trying to take time to breathe. We're talking about time outs. Actually,
because I imagine having a stroke devastates a whole family in terms of stress levels mm-hmm. and frustrations and grief mm-hmm. and all of those
That's
things.
That's right. You're grieving a loss of who you were and the functional capacity that you had, perhaps a job. But all is not lost. That's the whole point. All is not lost. You can have a full life. You can reach your optimal level of wellness at whatever stage you're in post-stroke as a stroke survivor. So focusing in on this stress reduction, using techniques like deep breathing, meditation, mindfulness-based stress reduction by Jon Kabat-Zinn, if you're interested in that. You can also look at, as I mentioned, your attitude about where you are, realizing you still have gifts, you have family, you have support, and that gets into the spirit, the support system around you, your purpose in life now, and the things that bring you energy. Looking at those spirit and feeding mind, body, and spirit.
Mind, body, and spirit. It's all vital for full recovery. More after the break. Don't go away. And we're back with a story from Everybody Walks. Meet Daniela.
I had a stroke 6 months ago. When it first happened, I was confused. I really didn't know what's going on because I was 18 and I had a stroke. So it took a while for me, even when I was in the hospital, to realize that I had a stroke and I really couldn't move my arm and my leg. I thought that I would regain that after like the surgery or something like that. But no, it took a while for me to understand that it was long term. It was like something that I had to work at.
We spend a lot of time on basic activities in the developmental sequence. Just like a child would learn how to roll and to crawl, we're doing the same thing, just at a very different level with a brain that's had some damage.
When you've had neurologic injury, you have to have a relearning process of how to use that limb again, because it's not that automatic task that we take for granted anymore.
I was working hard like throughout the day, and it was a lot of work.
The big one for us is walking, getting up, and that's by far everyone's goal in physical therapy. They want to walk.
Within the first couple weeks, I could stand, and then slowly I was able to walk.
When they get to the point where they can walk, and Daniela was a classic example, okay, once she got up, she went.
Walking used to be second nature to me, and now it's like I really have to think about it.
We might have 40 patients here on an inpatient unit, and each one of them has a different reason for why they might want to walk. Maybe it's a new parent that wants to be able to move with their child. Maybe it's an athlete that can't quite fathom that they'll never be able to be an athlete again. And you try to figure out on a personal, individual level with each patient what it is that motivates them to get better.
I'm hoping that I'll go back to Oregon for school, and that entails walking around the campus.
Walking is something that most of us take for granted, but people who have lost the ability to walk have to think through every single step.
Before, whereas the happiness might have come from a 1 mile walk, you'll see here it comes from going 25 feet in the parallel bars or 25 feet with a walker.
Because people always want to walk, but that might be someone's long-term goal. And unless you have a short-term goal in between that actually keeps them being realistic about what they can do and can get to, then sometimes they lose hope. And hope is something I think that we strive to keep alive.
A few months ago, I wouldn't be able to walk, so I feel good that I can do that now. It made me feel like, wow, this is good. This is like what I was working for. I didn't used to walk for fun. Now I do.
Walking is fun. That's a great attitude. And physical activity is important for us all, but especially so if you've just had a stroke. In her book, Dr. Frates had a stroke-savvy exercise program, and here she is with more.
You can, in fact, do exercises while lying in bed. You probably read about them, but you can be moving your legs, you can be moving your arms. All of this will help. Any kind of movement like that will help.
What does it help? What's it doing?
Mm-hmm. So what we're hoping to do is increase our heart rate to a level that we can increase our fitness level. Why? Because then we can become more functional throughout the day, get more done in the day when we increase our fitness level. So that will take not just moving our arms up and down, but it will take reaching a level of activity that increases our heart rate. This is also important, actually, for our brain and our recovery. Exercise itself, routine exercise, we have a lot of data now that indicates we can increase BDNF. What's that? Miracle-Gro for the brain, what is that? Brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. BDNF will help create new synapses, which is always good for recovery. It also, there's evidence, can increase the volume of our hippocampus. What's that? Our memory center. So getting exercise in whatever form we can. If our legs are weak, we can use a handheld
kind of bicycle
pedaling system. That is through your hands. If your legs are weak, but you can pedal, you can set up a Velcro system to keep your leg on the pedal and pedal. There are so many creative options for stroke survivors. it's a joy because there are so many possibilities, but you do need to think outside the box. And you do need to realize it's good for the recovery itself, but it's also good long-term for our risk of a second stroke, a heart attack, and for our brain in general, creativity and memory, as I mentioned.
So we're saying exercise ideally every day. For how long?
Yes. So some is better than none. That's the mantra. Some is better than none. But if we can accumulate 150 minutes of physical activity in the week, what does that mean? 5 days of a half hour, about. But if you can go 7 days, great, even better. But the United States Health and Human Services guidelines that came out in 2008, after looking at multiple studies on this, multiple medical studies, recommend accumulating 150 minutes of physical activity in the week. So that's our goal for stroke survivors and for stroke caregivers of stroke survivors and for you and for me.
Now, someone who's just had a stroke, they may be afraid of the risks from raising their heart rate. Any problems there if they're just doing it slowly and gently?
Mm-hmm. Very good question. And fortunately, stroke survivors are in the hospital for a period of time. So they often have a rehabilitation program in place. So they will be monitored while they're beginning their exercise to ease that concern and anxiety, which is very helpful. Then often when they go home, they might go into a cardiac rehabilitation program, place where they go to be exercised as they are monitored. Depending on what caused the stroke, if they have cardiac problems, certainly that will happen. They can always work with a physical therapist, a trainer, if they are feeling anxious and uncomfortable. They do need the blessing of their physicians before starting any exercise program, and it is important to be safe. Starting low at low intensity and ramping up slowly is the safest way to go. But if you are very concerned, speaking to the physician and getting a supervised exercise program to start. And you can even get a home program.
Great. That all sounds really good. Now, you also have the Stroke Savvy Diet.
Yes.
6-point Stroke Savvy Diet. Tell us about that.
Yes. Love the Stroke Savvy Diet because it actually continues to bear and continues to prove to be a fabulous diet to prevent a stroke. Because you know in nutrition, we are getting new information constantly.
And it's, you know, for someone who's had a stroke, they do not want a second stroke,
no.
Right? So we want to prevent that next one.
Exactly.
So what are your 6 points?
Yes.
We're running out of time, but
yes.
What are your six
yes.
points?
So the things I would say to focus in on for a stroke survivor are to eat fruits and vegetables, whole foods. Concentrate on the whole foods. Avoid processed foods. Sugar, white bread, processed wheat products, salt. If you have high blood pressure, it is a problem. Lowering salt intake, not adding salt on, and trying to avoid canned foods and be very aware of your salt intake. I would also recommend, depending on your cholesterol level, you need to talk with your physician about this, but looking at your cholesterol intake. Some people are very sensitive to cholesterol that they eat. Other people can manage it, so it's something you need to talk about with your physician, but the American Heart Association continues to recommend a low cholesterol diet and a low fat diet, no saturated fats. You don't want any trans fats. What's that? Partially hydrogenated oils.
Right.
Saturated fats come from red meats.
And what about smoking and alcohol?
Okay.
We've only got half a minute left.
Okay. Smoking cessation is very important in finding help. If you're not ready, find someone to speak with. A quit date needs to be on the calendar. Excess drinking leads to bleeds.
Remember the falling signs of a stroke? Face, arm, leg, language, eyesight, nasty headache, and gait or walking. And if you see any of those, then get medical help and get it fast. If you or a loved one is recovering from a recent stroke, Have hope. There's a lot you can do for recovery. Have patience. It's going to take time. And have goals. Set small ones and celebrate them when you achieve them. Do all you can to eat well to nourish your recovering brain. Exercise as much as possible to turn on the production of those hormones that grow the brain. And manage stress and discouragement by having good support from family, friends and God. And remember Dr. Frate's book, Life After Stroke. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.